welcome to this week's episode of Adoption Adventures. Thanks very much for coming to have a listen with us. As always, it's really, really cool to have you here, and the numbers continue to grow. So clearly, you guys are doing the hard work and spreading the word of Adoption Adventures and letting people know. So thank you for that. Those of you that do follow us on our social media would have picked up that in this week's episode, we have a special guest joining us. It's taken us many, many months of hard negotiations and challenges, but finally, we are pleased to announce that we have the special guest of Dad.
Hi.
So, Dad has joined us. He's joined us to talk to you guys about his experiences, the highs, the lows, and anything in between. We took to social media yesterday to say if you could ask Dad any questions, what would you ask? And we did get quite a few responses in, which is really, really good. What I'd like to do first, if I may, is I'd like you to talk about sort of your starting point of the story with regards to what the plan was, with regards to who was going to be staying home with little dude and how that all turned out and everything like that. So, over to you, Dad. Give us an intro.
Okay. Yes, so I have been little dude's dad for the last 7.5 years. Is that right?
Yep. You don't need to look so confused. That's definitely where it's been.
I forget dates and things. Originally I was going to be the stay-at-home parent, at least for the first year. But shortly before we actually adopted little dude, I had a job opportunity come up, which was too good to turn down. And we decided to change our plans lastminute.com, which did not go down so well with our social worker.
True story.
Social workers don't like change. They like everything to go according to plan and according to their agenda and regime. But, you know, life happens and you have to pivot and roll with that, really. So that's what we've done. So you ended up being stay-at-home dad, and I was the one that went out to work.
Absolutely. So it did throw things. It threw things completely for us. It took us out of, I suppose, our comfort zone. But we bounced back and we dealt with that, which was quite interesting. And it then added a new sort of layer to things, didn't it? Because for all those months we'd prepared for you to be the stay-at-home dad and be primary carer, so you had to swap your role at the last minute of primary carer to secondary carer. So I suppose our prep work was thrown.
It was, but looking back now, I think it was all probably for the best. And actually the stuff that you went through as the primary carer that I was kind of able to spectate rather than actually deal with the hard, heavy lifting and stuff. I think it was actually probably better place. I think things kind of worked out for the best in that respect.
Okay. Well, over the course of this episode, we'll probably delve more into some of those stories. But what I thought I might do is I might start with some questions and see if that then sort of brings out any extra questions.
Sounds good.
So the first one has actually come via email, and this is from Debbie, who is a training social worker herself. And she was really excited about the podcast and to hear sort of from an adopter's perspective on it, which was really cool. But what she wanted to know was, as she's going through the process of becoming a qualified social worker and she's going to be assessing.
Okay, yeah, I see.
So she wanted to first find out, you know, how did you find the assessment process in general?
Oh, well, it was the best thing that was ever happened. Assessment, you know, you have to do the assessment. It needs to be done correctly and accurately, because it does form. It's not just about ticking boxes. Ultimately, you are going to be adopting a child or children. And if that breaks down and fails, that is so detrimental to the young person or young people. That's not even considering your own needs as adopters and your own feelings around that. It has to be accurate, it has to be good and detailed. At the time, you sit there and you go, why the hell am I doing this?
Mm.
Because none of my other friends that are having babies biologically would ever go through this. They're not having to go through this level of scrutiny. But, like I say, it has to be done, it needs to be done properly, and you have to... I suppose you get out of it what you put into it.
Yeah.
There's no point in trying to cheat the system, as far as I'm concerned. You need to just be honest and deal with any kind of issues and flags that come up. So that's kind of my view.
Do you think that the assessment process itself, do you think that it paved the way to some of your learning for becoming a dad to Little Dude?
I think it probably did, yes, because there was aspects of it that I wasn't expecting.
Mm.
So, for example, going into my own background as a child, what was my childhood like? Well, actually, as an adult, I've never reflected and considered that, because my childhood was just my childhood, and
You never had cause to.
Yeah, in the nicest way, it was kind of insignificant. You know, that's kind of done, move on with the rest of my life.
Mm.
It wasn't negative or anything like that, but it... That's the dog. But for me, it kind of got me to start thinking about, actually, what was good in my childhood, what maybe could have been slightly different, and as a parent, like, you know, moving forward as a parent myself, what do I want to, like, carry forward?
Yeah. Now, all of our listeners are fully aware, they've seen many an image of our puppy. They know she loves to get involved in the podcast too. So all the listeners at home, we apologise for the puppy interruption.
She was maybe just feeling a little bit left out there.
Okay, the dog has now been silenced. We are all good.
In a humane way, I just want to point that out.
Yes, in a very caring and therapeutic way, she is now being cared for. It's all good. So it's really good, actually, because you're right. It does ask you to sort of delve into your own background and think about those highs and those lows, and what it is that you liked from your childhood and what you'd like to put into place as a parent. Because I think quite often it would be the way that people would become parents and not necessarily think about these things, but still want to be a good parent. So it's just challenging that, isn't it? And just forcing you to become better, I think. So
yeah, for sure.
So that's good. The sort of the follow-up question that Debbie had is, what advice would you have for an assessing social worker to get the best out of the adopters?
I think you need to build the rapport pretty early. They need to trust you. They need to be able to trust that you're not going to listen to what they've got to say, focus on the negative and run with that, because ultimately it's their assessment and that's going to be going in front of a panel. They want to put their best foot forward, but they need to be able to talk to you honestly. So I think it's about getting that balance right and making sure that they can talk to you honestly, but actually when it comes to the write-up, that you can write something that's going to reflect the accurate picture, but yes, not dwell on those negatives.
Yeah. See, I like to give advice to social workers as well when I'm asked that question. And it's quite similar to what you're just saying, but what I tend to say to social workers is, just for a moment, every now and then, put the pen down. So as someone's having a conversation with you, feel free to just put your pen down and say, okay, if I write what you've just said, it's going to come across poorly. Can we just delve into this properly as a conversation, and you can tell me what you mean by what you just said, before, like you say, writing it up as this huge drama that wasn't actually a drama in the first place, and then all of a sudden it's become this big thing that has been blown out of proportion, and then the adopters feel like they can't actually be honest.
Exactly. So they're moving forward, when they move on to the next section of the assessment, people pick up you know, people learn pretty quickly, so they'll just, you know, keep their mouth shut when they know that there's a potential challenge or issue to overcome.
Because we had this, didn't we? We had, not from our assessing social worker, but from a social worker that we had engaged with in the process, who took something that we'd said, and I can't even remember what it was now, but she'd taken it really far out of context, and it sounded like we were dreadful human beings that were doing something quite sort of unethical, I think, with work. I think it was when we were changing work. And she just wasn't comfortable with what we were saying. But everything that she was picking up was completely the wrong end of the stick and nothing like what was anywhere close to the truth. What that then did, it had this effect of us having to have a follow-up meeting to further discuss it. But ultimately, it then put us on the back foot with that social worker, and we were very jaded about what we would talk to her about. Mm. She needed to get a better understanding of what we had said in the first place and just relax with that information.
Yeah, I agree with that, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, excellent. Cool. So next, we're going to go to a question that came through from our Instagram page from House of Damo. They have asked, what is your best advice for a prospective couple waiting to be matched? Oh, that's such exciting times.
That is very exciting. I would say just be really open to different opportunities. We initially thought we would adopt one or two children. It's quite a young age, I think, up to about four or
five.
Yeah,
two to four we were looking at.
And then actually, little Doo turned out to be just turning seven when we adopted him. So, you know, quite a significant difference there. But we were really open to change. And the way the little dude came about and we learned of him, actually, it was really natural and really organic.
Mm.
And looking back, I wouldn't want it any other way, obviously, because he's my son. But
it all worked out.
It did. And actually, there's a huge... there's a huge argument for adopting a child that is older, that has a better understanding of what's happened to them, of their journey, and actually being able to unpack some of those emotions and issues that they've got.
Yeah.
And actually work through some of those things. For example, little dude, while he was in foster care, he had some therapeutic counselling, there was some speech therapy, there was a whole load of bits and pieces that needed to kind of happen to get him to where he was and really in a position to be able to move on to his forever family. And actually, we were kind of lucky because we were lucky, like in terms of actually what we ended up with, it was kind of halfway there.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I've
just come across really poorly.
No, I've talked about this in the previous episodes, how... little dude's foster family did such an incredible job. They laid such beautiful groundwork to allow us to hit the ground running, which was amazing, and made our life, like you say, a lot easier to get started. I think you're right as well, what you're saying about flexibility. You know, whatever age range you get sort of that you're looking at and going for, you've got to be open-minded. Mm. You've got to be flexible because parenting demands flexibility.
Exactly. You know, even if you're having, you know, people having birth children, you know, I want a little girl, you know, I want her to be, you know, into pink dresses and roses and go shopping when she's older and all that kind of stuff. It very rarely works out like that, you know.
Yeah.
Children, young people, they grow up in a certain way and it doesn't matter how much you try and influence them. They just don't change. They have their own personalities. So, you know, just be aware, actually, your family may be very different to what you imagine it, but that's not a bad thing.
That's really nice. As a side note, they are going to panel on 25th of March. Ooh, so
very exciting.
Very, very exciting. Now, I'm assuming that's matching panel, but if it is... approval panel, I know that many of our listeners will be quite nervous about panel. it's really not as scary as it sounds. I'll probably try to do an episode on panel. I've got someone who's actually a panel advisor, so I might see if I can interview her so as you can hear from that. But we'll cover that in another episode. But best of luck for the 25th of March. So another one of our Instagram followers, Tim Addy, has got a couple of questions. And first one is, when did you know that you wanted to go down the road of adoption?
When I realised I couldn't get pregnant. Now, you know, obviously we're a same-sex couple, so it's a bit different for us, which obviously limits our options. Mm-hmm. But really, kind of adoption for us was the only real viable option, and it seems like the most kind of easiest. It wasn't obviously easy, because becoming a parent is never easy, but for us it was
sort of the logical part.
Yeah, it was quite a natural progression, really, from our initial discussions about, hey, we want to have a family, to actually making it happen. It was quite straightforward. And actually, the information evenings we went to, and the information that our local authority provided for us, was actually pretty good and pretty supportive, actually.
When did you know that you wanted to have children? Because I don't feel that it was... I often talk about how I knew that I wanted to be a father from a very, very young age. What about you?
I suppose for me, it was probably as I was kind of reaching early 20s. I hadn't really thought about parenting up until that point. But then, because you were so keen on the idea, I thought, well, I suppose I could be convinced. And I was. And I think... for me, it took me a bit longer until I'd grown. I needed to grow up a little bit and realise what I wanted. And
I remember I had a conversation with Nana when you and I were engaged, and we'd talked about children, and I demonstrated a lot of my passion, and you started coming round to the idea, and I remember talking to Nana and saying that I was really, really concerned that you had just said that you were okay with adoption and with becoming parents just because you thought it was what I wanted to hear. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know how serious you were, and if it was something that once we got married, would you put it off and put it off and put it off until it just didn't happen?
You think very lowly of me, don't you?
No, no, I didn't feel that you had the same passion for becoming a parent.
Oh no, definitely you had more passion, like more kind of drive, or definitely immediate drive to do that. But for me, I think it just took a bit longer for me to kind of get there, buy into there.
But I remember we'd talked about it, and we said, you know, at the time we anticipated that the process would take sort of 2 to 3 years before we had even stepped foot through an information event. And I remember once we got married, we said, you know, perhaps we'll, once we, so building up to the wedding, we'd said perhaps we'll have a little look at adoption after the wedding, because then we would have been married for 3 years, so it would fit quite nicely. I kind of made a decision then that I was actually not going to talk about becoming parents after we got married. I was just going to stay silent on the matter and just see when you approached it, because I wanted to make sure that it was something you were interested in. And what I was really excited about was we got married in the July, and by the December we were at an information evening, and we'd read the book Becoming Dads, which you had organised all of that.
You, did I really?
Yeah, you bought
that
the book.
Like me at all.
You bought the book, you did loads of investigation into the different agencies that were available, you suggested which one that you liked, and organised for us to go to the information evening. And you took it all from, you led from the front on that, which really, really was quite wonderful for me, because it confirmed for me that it was something that you wanted to do as well, which I thought was really special. So You're looking rather confused. I guarantee that's what happened.
I don't remember any of that. I'm not saying it didn't happen, I just don't recall any of that. But sure, why not? I come off well on that story, so yeah, I'll run with that.
Yeah. And another question from Tim is, what did you do to prepare? Now, what they mean by this is with regards to childcare experience, because they've been indicated by their social worker that it's really important to get as much childcare experience as they can. Now, we've been talking about their experience. They've got tons, so I'm not sure what their social workers are.
Oh, yeah, no, we literally had none.
So what did you do to prepare?
Well, we borrowed the nieces.
Yes.
So we borrowed Cousin C.
And Cousin K.
Cousin K, yeah. So, yeah, we've done that. But actually, we didn't have a huge amount of other children in our lives. At the time, we were quite young adopting, really, weren't we?
Yes, yeah.
And so if you look now, a lot of our friends have got kids, and it would be a lot easier to kind of tick that box, so to speak. Mm. And in fact, it's not just about ticking boxes. You do need as much experience as you can. Yeah. So, yeah, if you've got nieces, nephews, friends, kids, etc., you know, start building it up, start looking after them, taking them out for the day, you know, start getting into, you know, helping mum and dad with the routines that they're doing as well. It is really, really important. And you can't, I mean, nothing's going to prepare you for being parents yourself, but really, if you can arm yourself a little bit more, it's not going to be a bad thing.
I think as well, certainly from our experiences, I'm sure you'd agree, the adoption community is such a welcoming one. So I would suggest that you find some support groups that are out there and start attending and meeting other adopters and hearing their experiences.
Yeah, definitely. So so our local authority organised some sessions. I think they still do. We just don't engage in them anymore, just purely because I think we've kind of moved on.
Little dude's that much older,
and he just doesn't get the benefit out of them. But especially for some of the younger kids, some of those groups are really good.
Mm.
And actually, when we used to attend, there would be occasional like volunteers that would help out that were currently waiting to go to panel, or you know, at some other point in their journey.
Yeah.
So and definitely,
it was great for them because they could talk to other adopters and find out sort of their real life experiences, and then actually see some real life adopted children and see how they're interacting, some of the challenges they're facing and everything like that. So that would certainly be my advice to people as well. So that's cool. Then from Twitter, a big fan of ours is Liz. She's offered so much help and she's been really, really great. She's been great to communicate with. Hearing about how they're getting on, and so they're approved adopters, and her and Alex are currently sort of waiting to be matched to a child. They've had a couple of profiles sort of waved under their noses of potential matches. They have been to a couple of matching events and things like that, so it's at that tipping point. They've not been matched to a child, so it's also that frustrating time of, you know, we didn't have this because of the way that our circumstances happened, but they're at that limbo point of, we're approved, we just don't have a child yet. How long do I wait? So their story's going really, really nicely. But Liz has asked, how did you make sure that you had quality time with Little Dude, particularly in the early stages?
It's a good question, actually. So initially, we done lots of family time.
Yep.
And I didn't have any time just Little Dude and I.
Mm.
And what was happening is Little Dude and Daddy were forming such a great close relationship, and I really was a complete third wheel. And I was starting to get resentful of that.
Mm.
So I was talking to some people about it and just kind of opening up and saying, no, I'm really frustrated with what's going on. I feel like, you know, I'm adding no value here at all. I'm literally just in the air, you know, in the house sucking valuable oxygen out of it. And firstly, there's a couple of things. So It's quite common for secondary parents, they're predominantly fathers, to feel like that when a child comes into the household, regardless of what route that happens. But actually, the second thing was, I wasn't carving out specific time for little dude and I.
Mm.
And as a result of that, I decided to fix that, because that's quite an easy fix. And almost instantly, I started seeing a change in behaviour. Little dude was much more attentive to me, and I was building that relationship independently of kind of the family unit of the three of us.
Mm.
So I would just say, make sure you've got, as well as family time, actually each parent has their own kind of standalone time as well. Mm. And even to this day, little dude and I will still go out and do stuff just us.
Yeah.
And leave you at home or whatever.
Yeah. It's crucial, isn't it? Because I mean, you've said it in the past, like if you are busy at work, you've got projects or something that you're doing at work, your time isn't available, little dude makes you suffer for that, doesn't he? He punishes you.
Yeah, definitely. So if I'm travelling for work, or even if I'm just doing late nights, it just, especially when he was younger, it used to be a lot more visible. Now he's a teenager, he's kind of less...
Yeah,
he's less kind of...
He's more understanding
of
that, and he understands where you're at.
Yeah.
So. But yeah, no, I think you're right. I think carving out that time is really important. One thing that I took from that experience as well was we had some attachment style counselling at the time, and that counsellor sort of suggested, right, you need to have a specific thing that's just yours and little dude's. And Dad decided to take Lego. He stole Lego away from me.
But I was just much better at it.
But what this meant was that Dad was the only parent that could do Lego with little dude. He became the Lego king and little dude became the Lego prince. So if ever little dude wanted to play with Lego, it had to be Dad that he turned to, which was really, really exciting to watch how dependent he became on you when he wanted to play those games, which is really cool. So find things like that, I would suggest, works well. Okay, so another one from Instagram, I think it's HStans. So what are your thoughts on fostering for adoption?
Okay, so I've got no experience on this because we went down the old traditional route. But, I mean, it seems like a really great scenario for a child going into the care system.
Mm.
But I suppose it would be a smoother, less disruptive journey for a young person. So I think it's very positive. I think there's obviously a lot that could be very damaging for adopters on there.
Mm.
In terms of,
There's risk involved.
Yeah, you anticipate, you're taking a child or children into your home and you're hoping that they become a permanent fixture, but actually there isn't a guarantee of that, and things can break down and it could be very...
Very difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I don't know if I would be able to do that.
I'm not sure I could.
I think it'd be very difficult. I think it's a really good scenario for children, and it's probably the better way of that happening. But I think it would be really difficult.
Mm.
But if you go in knowing those risks and you understand that,
yeah,
and maybe you can get a bit of a trial run first placement isn't meant to be.
I think as well. I mean, there's the pressure because you become a foster carer to begin with, which means that you then have to do contact with birth families. And that could be going to see birth parents 4-5 times a week.
Mm.
It probably wouldn't be that much, but it could be.
Yeah.
And that means that you've got to build this relationship with the birth family very quickly, and that could be quite a challenge as well.
Mm.
So there's a lot, I think there's a lot of challenges within it. I think
there is a lot of positives as well, though,
because now you're
sort of saying that, actually, if you've built up a level of rapport and you've had some dialogue with the birth family, actually that could be a really positive thing, because we had some dialogue with little dude's birth mum, And actually, that was a really good experience. Well, not really good experience, but it was a positive experience for his birth mum. And also, it's been good for us when we've been able to turn around to little dude and say, like, yeah, we have met your mum. And, you know, we can answer some additional questions and we can give you a bit more context behind things.
Yeah.
Plus, as well, I don't know this for a fact, but I would assume if you're a foster parent, the level of support that you have available via your agency will probably be significantly higher. Is that fair to say?
From my experience, yes. When you go through the fostering to adoption route, it's the support, the level of support is really, really strong. The social workers are there a lot more frequently and you're supported with all of that contact. You're never made to do that alone. So you get a higher level of support.
I can see some benefits there. I can definitely...
Well, it's great.
By having this conversation, I'm kind of moving quite significantly to a more kind of neutral stance on it now.
It's great as well. It's... For those of you listening, it can also be called early permanence if some of you are sort of working out what we're talking about. But the concept behind it is stop children moving, cut out the moves. I worked with a social worker and she told me of a case, this was many number of years ago, but she had a child, I think he was 6, and he had had 21 placements.
I mean, that's ridiculous. People need to be fired for that. I mean, that's just horrific, isn't
it? Yeah, and it's not okay. Whereas with fostering for adoption or early permanence, the concept is this child will come from the hospital and move in with you, or certainly sort of the
idea is
they move from birth, care, from birth family, and move straight in with you. So, and then the hope is that that transition is completed and the plan is for adoption. So it's then one move and one bond. So I think it can be great for kids.
And presumably the type of placements that would be made would be the ones that have a strong likelihood of moving to adoption.
So I can only talk from the experience I have from our agency and the work that I've done with our sort of social workers on this. It may be different in other agencies, but they are very risk averse. So they would do this in cases whereby there's a birth mum that's had several children removed already.
Yeah, so a high likelihood that a child will be an adoption order for that child.
Yeah, and that birth family have not made any changes in their lifestyle since the last child was removed. So the likelihood is it's going to go to court and adoption will happen. So they are risk averse, so they do tend to sort of sway more on the caring for the adopters, making sure that it's never a guarantee.
I would definitely be interested in finding out more about that if I was, you know, if we were to adopt again, not that we are, but I would definitely be open to that discussion as a route.
Absolutely. Lovely, okay. So, you all heard it, he wants to adopt again. There we go.
We've just got a dog. That is more pressure.
Please do not.
And time.
Do not say getting a puppy is the same as adopting a child. That would ruin this podcast. Right, and a final question that we've had through from Finally Five. How did each of you cope with the change in work-life balance?
Pass. I don't know, actually.
I suppose because you were the secondary carer, your work-life balance didn't change massively, really.
No, I also changed jobs at that time, though.
Yeah.
So I suppose it's quite hard to answer that question because I didn't... It's not like I worked for the same employer.
We
adopted Little Dude. And I carried on working for that employer. I swapped employments at that time.
I think we were quite lucky with the job that you took on because it was one, obviously there was pressure and whatnot, but it was one where at the end of the day you could say, I am now done for the day, I'm going home. You didn't have a job whereby you were working lots of overtime, lots of extra hours here, there and everywhere. So you were able to stop the clock and say, I'm now going home, I'm switching off for the day. So certainly in those early years, you were able to put more time into Little Dude and I and support us,
yeah,
then I won't say you weren't growing your career, because you were, but you were developing it. I think you developed it quite slowly for those first few years.
I did. I was doing a lot of study in the background as well. But actually, yeah, as little D then got older, I then changed jobs and picked up.
You've gone into a higher pressure job, yeah, and
yeah,
and more responsibility and
more travel and things like that.
So I think for me, obviously, becoming the primary carer, that was quite a challenge for me, because I lost a big chunk of my identity. I stopped. At that time, I was a troubleshooting sales manager, and I was travelling, and I was relied upon, and I was in very important meetings, and then I became Daddy, and people stopped calling me my name. I just became Daddy or Little Dude's Dad, and I sort of lost a big chunk of that. So it was quite important over the years to get that part of my identity back, I suppose. And now I'm in a position whereby, with my work, because I run my own business, I'm able to work my diary around Little Dude. So my work-life balance is beautiful. It's fantastic.
But the thing is, you've taken on more, as Little Dude has got older, you've taken on more because you've been able to.
Yeah.
And you developed yourself that way, haven't you?
Absolutely.
So I suppose you blend and you accommodate to what's needed.
It's like what we said at the start, flexible and open-mindedness, isn't it? Okay, well, that's really cool, and I think that's going to draw us to a conclusion on the questions. Perhaps we'll have you as a guest again on a future episode, and we'll sort of quiz you on some other topics, because I feel there's so much that we didn't get to talk about. But on behalf of the listeners, I'd like to say a big thank you for coming on to the podcast and giving us your honest views and discussions. I found it really helpful.
My pleasure.
So all of you listening, thank you very much for listening. We look forward to sharing future episodes with you as well. If you do find that you have got any questions that you didn't get to ask and you would like answered, do drop us a line on our social media, and we'll make sure that in the future we do bring Dad back. So the social media that you will be able to find us on, Twitter is AdoptionAdvent1, Facebook and Instagram is Adoption.Adventures, or you can drop us an email at AdoptionAdventures123@gmail.com. Until next week, thank you very much for tuning in, and we'll speak to you soon. Thanks.